from London, BBC Caribbean Report.
The Prime Minister of the Netherlands, Antilles, resigns from office. A warning from the Bahamian Prime Minister on the exclusion of small island states. And Guyana is banned from exporting its wildlife. I'm Emma Joseph, and you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. Attempts to avert a fiscal crisis in the Netherlands Antilles have tonight ended in the government's collapse. The Prime Minister dissolved her coalition government and has submitted her own resignation. The six-party coalition has been struggling to reduce a public debt of $2 billion. But the proposed package of austerity measures, which included drastic cuts in the civil service, was rejected by some members of the coalition. Well, a short while ago, I spoke with Mike Jarvis, our correspondent in Dutch St. Martin. I started by asking what the latest news was.
The latest is that the government has fallen. As a matter of fact, the two governments have fallen, being the federal government of the Netherlands Antilles and the island government of Curaçao. This is a problem that started in the coalition of the local government in Curaçao, where the parties which are part of the federal government coalition also make up the local government. So the local government falls, it has had a domino effect, so to speak, on the federal government.
So how did this all come about?
The crux of the matter is a difference of opinion and a difference of approach between the Prime Minister's party, the People's National Party of Prime Minister Susie Kamilaroma, and the Popular Labour Party of the President of Parliament, Errol Coover, and another party that has a very strong working class support called the Frente Obrero Liberation Party of a gentleman called Anthony Godet. The PLP and the Fall Party have very strong support among the working class people, the Labour Party obviously being a Labour Party. So when it comes to talk about instituting the austerity measures, those two parties, even though they had voted during the parliamentary debate in favor of the austerity measures, there was always a reluctance regarding the cost-cutting measures, and in particular, as those cost-cutting measures affect the civil servants, because one of the principal recommendations of the International Monetary Fund, which was involved at the time, and the government-appointed National Economic Review Commission, was to cut the civil service. The civil service is bloated. That's been the general train of thought on this matter, that the government at the moment, its annual budget at the federal level, in the region of 60%+, some say even up to 70% of the budget is allocated towards paying salaries.
So essentially, they tried to bring in these budget cuts, and it's led to this collapse?
It led to the collapse, and what really precipitated it over the past few days was a local insular situation in Curaçao, where the local government of Curaçao is cash-strapped, as is the federal government. But the problem appears to be more acute in Curaçao, where the local government is hard-pressed to pay salaries even this month, we understand. The local government coalition went to the commercial banks in Curaçao for a bridging loan to pay salaries until the end of the year. And the commercial banks basically said, we will give you the money on condition that you implement these very much recommended austerity measures. And among those, cutting the civil service corps and reducing or eliminating a lot of the benefits enjoyed by civil servants. And the Labour Party and the Fall basically found themselves in a position they claimed that they could not go along with that. So to push the austerity package through, particularly the cost-cutting measures, which have often been postponed, it took the commercial banks of Curaçao to force the Prime Minister's hand. In the end, she agreed that there was no alternative but to do that. She simply couldn't convince the two other parties, the PLP and the Fall, to go along with her.
Do you think that these fiscal measures will be able to go through? There's no government.
She will stay on in a caretaker capacity until a new government is formed. And it's more than likely that Prime Minister Kamilaroma and her party, the PNP, will be involved in this new coalition government that we are going to have, because at the moment, nobody wants to go the route of having elections.
Mike Jarvis in Dutch St. Martin. Parliamentarians from 86 sovereign states are in the Bahamas for the 29th session of the African, Caribbean and Pacific European Union Joint Assembly. Each year, members produce a report on a topic of interest to both the industrialized nations of the North and the developing countries in the South. Bahamian Prime Minister Hubert Ingram opened the conference earlier today, and Debbie Nash filed this report.
Prime Minister Hubert Ingram underscored the vulnerability of small nation states as he referred to ongoing post-hurricane reparations costing hundreds of millions of dollars taking place in the host country, noting,
"We are similarly conscious of changes taking place in the world's economy, which impact all our economies, and which are frequently less sensitive to or flexible enough to take into account the peculiar economic circumstances of small states and landlocked states, many of which are included in the ACP grouping."
The Bahamas Prime Minister also had concerns about a single market economy.
"Let me say that the economy of many ACP developing countries are ill prepared for such an eventuality. In this regard, the recent World Trade Organization ruling on the banana protocol and the implications ruling has for ACP banana producing countries serve to emphasize a growing lack of understanding of the fragility of many ACP economies."
Prime Minister Ingram repeated a call for increased flexibility in both trade policies and trade liberalization.
"Without such flexibility, there's a real danger that a stubborn commitment to a one-size-fits-all economic policy relegate many developing countries to a state of perpetual underdevelopment, a position associated with all the associated social and political maelstrom which we in the ACP and in the EU seek to end."
The conference continues through Thursday. This is Debbie Nash in Nassau for BBC Caribbean Report.
Barbadian leader Owen Arthur is suggesting a sub-regional maritime patrol organization as the first step towards closer cooperation with the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States. Speaking in Bridgetown, the Prime Minister said he's already put the idea forward to fellow Caribbean community leaders.
"Our land space is not our most largest resource. Our biggest resource is our exclusive economic zone. But it is an exclusive economic zone that we share with the countries of the Eastern Caribbean. And obviously, none of us will ever properly be able to develop the energy resources or the other resources in the exclusive economic zone unless we do it together. There's a question of the limitation of maritime limits. There's also the question of the management, the joint management of the Eastern Caribbean marine environment. And I strongly believe that we need to have an Eastern Caribbean Maritime Affairs Commission to do the same thing for our maritime affairs that the regional security system is doing jointly for our security."
Prime Minister Arthur also said that he's proposed the idea of joint OECS and Barbadian diplomatic representation abroad.
"Barbados has also put to the OECS the notion of joint representation and the sharing of common premises to better represent our interests globally. Like the OECS, Barbados did not have a presence in Geneva. But as you know, the World Trade Organization is based in Geneva. On the last occasion, during the Uruguay round of negotiations, we were not there. And many developing countries were not there. And when we do not take ourselves seriously in international negotiations, and then we get hurt, we have ourselves to blame. Geneva, however, is frightfully expensive. We don't have a presence in Asia. We have hardly a presence in Latin America. We're now trying to develop a presence in Africa. But for the future, in a new global society, all of us must have a global focus on foreign affairs. But the capacity for any country in the Eastern Caribbean singly to represent its interests by having a presence on its own behalf, wherever that presence is required, is simply just beyond our capabilities. So wherever it's possible for us to have either shared facilities or joint representation, we are put into them that we would love to do so. We have therefore established a presence in Geneva to make sure that in the next round of WTO negotiations, Barbados is going to be properly represented.
Barbadian Prime Minister Owen Arthur speaking from Bridgetown. You're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. The Caribbean will have a new carrier next year, and backers are determined that it won't be a flop. Eastern Caribbean Express is aimed at servicing the growing number of tourists who are taking holidays in the Eastern Caribbean. As Bevan Springer reports, the carrier, which is sponsored by Air Jamaica, has no plans to be a fly-by-night operation.
Eastern Caribbean Express, the brainchild of Air Jamaica and Sandals Resorts chairman Gordon Butch Stewart, is likely to be airborne in February, serving the islands of Tobago, St. Vincent, Grenada, St. Lucia, and Dominica from its hub in Barbados. Alan Chastanet, Air Jamaica's Vice President of Marketing and Sales, says finding a partner to support jet service from North America was difficult, so EC Express was born. Now, how will this new development affect regional commuter carrier LIAT?
LIAT's been around for a very, very long time. I know that they have some problems, and hopefully they'll be able to work them out. But clearly, we've not been able to find a partner that understands that you need to be able to have relationships with other international carriers. EC Express has also been having discussions with several other U.S. and U.K. and European carriers in terms of providing good connections for them with their flights into Barbados and St. Lucia. So we're very, very keen on stimulating the market and being able to augment our existing services and also the regional services.
Chastanet says Air Jamaica has learned from the mistakes of other commuter carriers, and with sound financial planning, EC Express is likely to be successful. While Chastanet offered no comment at this time, it is widely speculated that Trinidad and Guyana may soon lay the welcome mat for Air Jamaica's jet flights in the year 2000. Bevan Springer in New York City for BBC Caribbean Report.
The Convention for International Trade in Endangered Species has slapped an immediate ban on the export of Guyana's wildlife. The Geneva-based organization said at a recent meeting that the trade must be better regulated, but many in the industry fear that the ban could simply increase black market smuggling. Colin Smith reports from Georgetown.
The wildlife trade in Guyana is not classified as one of its main industries. However, one of the country's larger and more experienced exporters of wildlife, Mr. Lawrence Van Sertima, told BBC Caribbean Report that it is a trade which could earn the country close to $1 million per month. At present, he said, it provides the livelihood for a significant number of Guyanese.
It is not just the exporters. The exporters are the high-profile part of the trade. But you have the trappers, you have the box makers, you have the staff on all of the wildlife stations, the carpenters, people who maintain vehicles that are constantly running into the interior to bring wildlife out. It's a complete network, as you would find in any other industry. So while there are only a small number of exporters, this is an industry that touches about, about 7,000 people. In a country where the national population is, 700,000? So the 1% of the nation's population.
Most of those associated with the trade may now have to seek other employment. On Monday, local exporters were told that the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, known as CITES, had imposed a ban on exports of wildlife from Guyana. The reason for the ban was that after years of repeated requests, Guyana had failed to enact the necessary legislation to regulate the industry here. Guyanese authorities say legislation has been drafted and should be put before Parliament soon. However, the CITES committee only meets every 6 months, and it could mean that the million-dollar industry here could remain closed for quite a long time. Some observers, however, question how effective the ban would be. It is well known that the amount of wildlife which is smuggled out of the country is at least as large, if not larger, than that which is exported legally. The ban has also caught many local exporters with hundreds of thousands of exotic animals, birds, and fish in holding pens. The exporters say it is very costly to get and keep them in these facilities, with some of them doubtful about whether the proposed legislation will find acceptance by CITES. The choice for them is either to release the animals back into the wild or to find other routes to Europe and the USA.
Colin Smith in Georgetown, Guyana for BBC Caribbean Report.
And that's it for BBC Caribbean Report. Just a reminder that
this and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
Join us at 11.05, 11.15 and 12.10 GMT for our next morning programs. I'm Emma Joseph, saying goodbye from London.